強いです。
Okay, good evening everyone, and thank you for coming. I'm going to speak tonight about an extremely relevant, practical topic. It's not the simplest of topics, but it's not as complex as you might imagine. I think people are just a little bit too scared of approaching it, rather than just understanding it with its few grounded ideas and fundamentals. And that's what I'm here to do tonight. So we're going to learn a lot about Shemitah in general. We're going to learn about how Shemitah is relevant beyond the Shemitah year. So the title this year is Shemitah Beyond Shemitah. And we're going to we're going to see how it's relevant here in Toronto, as well as if you are planning a trip to Eretz Yisrael, so you'll know how to sort of guide yourself and understand what Shemitah does over the course of the next year, so the entire year forward. We were in the office today, and we were very, very busy with this topic, especially today. I pretty much was busy with it all day, with the topic of Shemitah. Why? Because Rosh Hashanah is approaching, and people are out there shopping. Today is probably the biggest day, the biggest shopping day, just because of how it falls. There you go. And so we went out there really yesterday and the day before just to see what was on the shelves at the supermarkets from Israel, and we wanted to be able to identify and then guide. So people are buying, particularly pomegranates, of course, for Rosh Hashanah. It was one of the simanim, Shiyirbu Zuchiyoseinu Kerimon, that our merits should increase, like the seeds of a pomegranate, and also dates. Dates is Shiyatamu Sonenu. It's one of the simanim that our enemies should be annihilated, and these rimonim and dates and tamarim are out there in the stores, and lo and behold, much of, especially the dates, many of the dates out there, the selection of the dates, are from Eretz Yisrael. So now we have to thinking about Shemitah now. So you'll say, okay, just buy something that's not from Eretz Yisrael, which is the easy way out that people take. So, and when I got home tonight, I don't know if this should be recorded, but when I got home tonight, so I asked my wife, which dates did you buy? So she says, actually, I bought from Costco. So I said, well, where are the dates from? So she says, don't worry, I checked the label. They're not from Eretz Yisrael. So I said, where are they from? She said with a smile, they're from Iran. So I was thinking, so you mean to say that I should say, Shiyatamu Sonenu, and then I'm going to take a bite into an Iranian date, and I'm going to say, there you, I got you. But those are basically
biting the head off.
Yeah, you're biting the head off the enemy. Yeah. There are only two choices out there on the market. There's Iranian dates and Israeli. Can you imagine the publicity? After one of my emails today, if one of the local papers gets a hold of it, COR advises to buy Iranian dates and to divest from purchasing Israel dates. They have to be very, very careful, of course. And really, really, in all seriousness, that's not what this is about. And you'll see by the end of the class tonight that I'm gonna do my best within the constraints of Shemitah to promote as much as possible the purchasing of Eretz Yisrael product. And the reason is because according to the Ramban holds that, even though not everybody agrees with him, but the Ramban holds that if somebody eats Shemitah produce, if you make a bracha and you eat Shemitah produce, you actually fulfill a mitzvah of eating Shemitah produce. It's actually a mitzvah to go out there and buy Shemitah produce in order to eat it so that you can fulfill a mitzvah, which is a complete turnaround, right? Shemitah, we're used to hearing, what do you mean? You got to stay away. It's usher. And then the Ramban goes and says, because in the Torah it says lo achla, that v'haitz Shabbos haaretz azos lachem lo achla, that the Torah says this land is given to you in the seventh year. It doesn't belong to anybody. It's given to the whole entire nation to eat, to consume. right? So the Gemara takes it and makes a bunch of drushes from it, which we'll talk about tonight, what that pasuk means to say and what you can and can't do. But it says in the Torah, you should eat Shemitah produce. That's what it says in the Torah. And therefore, according to the Ramban, at least, it is a big deal to eat Shemitah produce. And when we talk about Esrogim, we're going to focus on that as well. So really, 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 when we talk about Shemitah, we have to be able to be knowledgeable enough to embrace the concept. We should not take the initial approach, which is, you know what, if it has anything to do with Shemitah, I'd rather just not learn and just avoid it, which is the wrong approach. And that's what we'll do a little bit tonight. So we're going to begin by just saying that the end of 5775, the Jewish year that's about to conclude on Sunday, is the end of the Shemitah year. So it's a tremendous milestone for the farmers of Israel and the residents of Israel. Anyone who owns a lawn fulfilled the mitzvah of Shemitah this year. You completed a big mitzvah. They went through an entire year and they completed a mitzvah. What was the mitzvah? They rested. They were mafkir their land. The hefker means to set it free, to say that the land belongs to everybody. They weren't allowed to put up fences around their property. They had to open the doors of their properties. They had to let, they couldn't work on their property. And it's a big deal for the farmers of Eretz Yisrael and the residents that they were able to complete this mitzvah. But we have to be aware that the mitzvah of Shemitah really, I wouldn't say just beginning, but it's the profound impact of Shemitah really begins at this point. And the reason is because when it comes to fruit, at least, we'll explain the difference in a moment, but when it comes to fruit, fruit is just beginning to become Shemitah now. So we have to sort of separate the ideas. One idea is resting from the land and, you know, setting it free, so to speak, being mafgirit. That's the year, and the year is coming to an end. It's still going to take the farmers a long time to start up the fields again and to get crop out of it. It's going to take another year for them to even start. But when we try to understand the concept of Shemitah produce, what is Shemitah produce? We will see that we're just sort of beginning, at least vis-a-vis, when it comes to fruit. So what's the difference? How do you classify Shemitah produce? Okay, so the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says there's really three categories of classification of Shemitah produce. There's vegetables, there's grains and legumes, and then there is fruit. Okay, so vegetables is the simplest. Vegetables, and we could even draw like a timetable here, but if you think about it on a timeline, vegetables, the Gemara says, their Shemitah status is determined by when they are harvested. Okay, when they're completely grown and ready to be harvested, perhaps, according to many of the commentators. The timeline is like this. When if the vegetable is harvested during the Shemitah year, it's Shemitah. So it actually begins Shemitah for a vegetable begins in the beginning of the year. The day after Rosh Hashanah on Tzom Gedalia is the first day that somebody would go out to the field and they'd actually see something in the field, a vegetable, they'd cut it off. It's called Lakita in the Lashon of the Gemara. So they cut it off, they harvest it. That means that if it was harvested now, then it's Shemitah. That's as far as vegetables go. So from the day after Rosh Hashanah, you can't harvest on Rosh Hashanah, but from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, anything that's harvested in between when it comes to vegetables is called Shemitah produce. Anything that's harvested on Wednesday of this year, next week on Wednesday, a week from yesterday, is going to be non-Shemitah produce. Or at least anything that wasn't ready by Rosh Hashanah to be harvested is going to be non-Shemitah produce. So vegetables are already going to expire next week or the week after, perhaps.
So it's not planting, it's harvesting.
Yes, harvested.
It's not winning
for vegetables. Yeah, it doesn't mean that the farmer is allowed to plant. He's not allowed to plant, but that's a separate idea. The restrictions on a farmer is one concept. That's finished. That's going to finish next week. The how do you classify Shemitah produce is what we're talking about because that's what's relevant to us. So the vegetables, whatever's harvested last year, or in this past year, is Shemitah. Whatever is harvested in the coming year is not Shemitah. Okay, so vegetables were about to conclude. Now, there was many vegetables in the beginning of the season. Certainly, there were vegetables. There still are hot peppers coming from Israel. You'd find them in supermarkets. They're organic hot peppers, beautiful looking peppers. I never tried it. Those peppers, yeah, probably very hot. But those peppers are Shemitah. So they're already there and they are Shemitah. Okay? Let's put vegetables aside. For reasons that are not relevant to us at this point beyond Shemitah, vegetables are actually forbidden to eat. You cannot consume Shemitah vegetables. So anything that was classified as a Shemitah vegetable becomes forbidden to eat. That's a rabbinic decree because they wanted to discourage the farmers from planting during the Shemitah year. They saw that farmers were planting. They were just saying, oh, it grew by itself. And therefore, in order to make sure farmers wouldn't plant, they said that you can't eat it anyways. So there's no point. There's no point in planting.
We said before, doesn't apply to vegetables.
That's on the rabbinic level. They've canceled it. Okay, that's concerning vegetables. Now vegetables is out of our realm because it's not relevant to us anyways. When it comes to legumes and grains, I'm not going to spend much time on it. I'm just going to tell you that the determining factor of when did how does that become classified as Shemitah? It depends on when it became one third grown. Shlish gidulo, the Gemara says, a third grown. So when it becomes a third in its growth cycle, if that time, that point of becoming one third grown is during the Shemitah year, then it's Shemitah. If it's not during the Shemitah year, then it's not Shemitah. So what happens? Imagine our timeline again. So most of the produce immediately following Rosh Hashanah that you're harvesting has been a third grown already last year. So it's not Shemitah, right? Until you get, let's say, a third of the year. I'm not saying it's not exactly like that. But if you come to a third of the year, so most of the produce was probably more than a third grown from last year. And therefore, the grains and the legumes. And therefore, those items are not Shemitah because they're from the sixth year. Then from somewhere in the quarter of the year or so and onwards, you're now going to be harvesting vegetables legumes and grains that were a third grown after Rosh Hashanah, that they reached the point of a third growth after Rosh Hashanah, and therefore they're classified as Shemitah. So when do they expire? When does that expire? When a legume or a grain reaches the point of one third of its growth in the year following Shemitah, so it would be another few months it's going to be relevant. So grains and legumes are still going to be Shemitah product until another quarter of a year, or maybe a few months. Okay? That's grains and that's legumes. Very rare to see grains and legumes from Eretz Yisrael in Canada, so it's not really relevant so much to our conversation, but if you are going to Eretz Yisrael, you will know that grains and legumes are still Shemitah well into the year. Okay?
What, December or so?
I don't know dates. I have a book of every item. Wheat, barley, they're all different. So it depends on the cycle of that particular grain. So if it's depends when, it just depends.
So how about things like manufactured product, like cookies or something
well,
like that?
Well, they can't use Shemitah grains. Because they're subject to the same prohibition of consumption that vegetables are subject to. Again, they were afraid that people were going to plant these kinds of things because they grow as they're planted, they grow, and the farmers were going to do that, and therefore they just discouraged them from doing that by saying you can't eat it anyways.
So Israeli cookies, you don't have to worry the grain came
from. No, because they're bringing in wheat from Chutz La'aretz, so that's not a problem. If it has a hechsher, right? Okay, now this is really the main part of our conversation, is fruit. Okay, now fruit. Fruit is not dependent on when you pick it, on harvest it. It's not dependent on a shlish gidulo. It depends on something that the Gemara calls chanata. Chanata, really, if you translate it, means when it sprouts. When it sprouts. That's if it sprouts during the Shemitah year. I don't really want to translate it as sprouting because the Rambam doesn't translate it as sprouting. The Rambam translated it as at the point where it reaches edibility, where you could actually eat it. Okay? So let's call it chanata just for argument's sake.
It's a bit later than when it
sprouts. Yes, it's significantly later. but it's a point of edibility. Okay, so that's what the Rambam says is chanata. We'll say chanata, which is very, very early on. It doesn't really matter because you just have to look at a timetable if you want a practical answer. But basically, think about our timeline again. That means that if it didn't, that all of the fruit I've picked in the beginning of the Shemitah cycle was all from last year, because it has to go through a full growth cycle basically during the Shemitah year. So fruit it has to blossom or sprout or become edible during the Shemitah year, and then it has to fully grow, right? So that's a long time, and each fruit is a different life cycle, of course. And if you're talking about dried fruits, you're talking about more time, right? But you're basically talking about a timetable which only began in the summer. It only began the first fruit. I mean, there are fruits that are faster, but I think grapes are much faster. But the main fruit, like, I'll give you a couple of examples, because that's what we're talking about. Dates, only the date season in Eretz Yisrael is in August. The picking season is in August. Okay, so if the picking season means that if the dates that you're picking in August, those are the dates that sprouted or had chanata in Shemitah. Okay, and they only come to fruition in August. That's very late in the year. It's just last month. What? In Elul.
One season.
What?
Yeah. So that means right through till next August.
That's right. That means that the cycle, they actually say it's from August of this year till September of next year. Because that's the end of the date season. And they call that the 2015 crop. Okay? And any dates that you see on the market, you're not going to see fresh dates, but you'll see dry dates. Any dates that are on the market prior to August of this year is called the 2014 crop, or it might be even earlier. What? Which is not Shemitah, which is from Shana Shishis, the sixth year, not the seventh year. And so, really, it only just begins. Now, Esrogim it's an interesting Gemara in the beginning of Kedushin that the Esrogim are compared to both fruits and vegetables.
They grow all the time, don't they?
What?
Isn't that the thing about Esrogim? They grow all the time? There's not going to be a season.
Esrogim are different for this reason, but they still take them a long time to grow, right? So Esrogim really, and according to halacha, were machmir, that it should go, it should expand from the time of you harvest an esrog to the time that it sprouts. So it's almost a 2-year cycle for Esrogim. Okay? So that's the Gemara says, that it's both a fruit and a vegetable because there's no real season. Now, putting the discussion aside, you can't really harvest an esrog after Rosh Hashanah last year, of the Shemitah year, and have it ready by Sukkot, unless you own an esrog orchard or you're very close to the field. So most people are not using Shemitah esrogim last year. They're using Shemitah esrogim this year. Okay, why? Again, because fruits go after. How do you determine the Shemitah status of a fruit? It depends when it first blossomed or first became edible, right? So edibility. So now, even though it's after Shemitah, Sukkot is after Shemitah this year, right? All of the fruits that were picked in the last few months up until Sukkot became edible during the Shemitah year. And that's why this is the year that it's relevant. And that's why the season goes all the way until next year. So it depends. Each fruit is different, but a lot of fruit, it's a summer season, it's the harvest, and through next summer, it's still going to be very relevant. Okay? Another example, mangoes, which Costco has, Israeli mangoes, beautiful mangoes, will remain Shemitah until the summer of 5776. Okay? Now, the fruit are different than the vegetables and the legumes and the grains. Why are they different? Because we said the vegetables, legumes, and grains, those are forbidden to consume. Why are they forbidden to consume? Because the farmer might illegally plant, you know, and unscrupulously plant, and then we want to discourage him from doing so. So we said, don't plant, we're going to usher it, we're going to say it's forbidden, so there's no point in planting. But fruit, you can't plant fruit, right? You can't plant fruit, they just grow on their own. Any fruit that you're going to have during the Shemitah, including esrogim, they've grown on their own. Right, you're not allowed to work the field, you're not allowed to do anything, so they've grown on their own. There are different ways to do it, but we'll get into that soon. So they grow on their own. So if the fruit are growing on their own, there's no reason to say that they're forbidden from consumption, because there's no reason to. So fruits are not forbidden for they actually eat. That's what people do. They walk into a field. Hello, I'm here today. I'm going to grab an apple and make a bracha, eat it, and keep the laws of Shemitah that are relevant to the fruits, which we'll talk about in a moment. But that's what they're doing basically during the Shemitah year. So they are eating the fruit. They are participating in Shemitah. And that's why last year Shemitah was like a scary thing. Like, usher, you can't touch it, don't buy it, whatever. This year it's not that way. This year the fruit of Eretz Yisrael is actually permitted for consumption. And it might even be a mitzvah, or at least it's a special inyan to eat the fruit of Eretz Yisrael this year, which is an incredible opportunity. Now, we have to know that even though it's not forbidden for consumption, so what is it? What are the rules? So the rules are under the category, we'll call it Kedushas Shvius, which means they're sanctified, they're imbued with a special holiness called Kedushas Shvius, the holiness of Shemitah, or the holiness of the seventh year. Now, when something's holy, you know, right? If we had a Beis HaMikdash, then and it's holy, it's Kodesh, so if a person is impure, if he's Tamei, he can't touch it. He can't walk in there. If he's not a Kohen, he can't go past a certain point, right? If he's not the Kohen Gadol, he can't go into Lefnai Elohim. If it's not Yom Kippur, he can't go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right? The more holy something is, the more it hands off, or we have to kind of treat it with special care. So for practically speaking, there's going to be restrictions that we have to deal with. What are those restrictions? And the restrictions actually span the farming all the way till you have to discard it. So from the beginning to the end, they're holy. What does holy mean? So aside for all the farming activities, which again, we're not going into, it's not our shiur tonight, but for on a practical level for us to know, so let's say you're an importer or a wholesaler or a retail of Israeli fruits, right? So you own a restaurant, or in some level you're doing business with Israeli fruits. It's actually, generally speaking, it's forbidden to do any business with Shemitah fruit. You're not allowed to do business. It's usur. La'achla v'lo l'schora, the Gemara says. It's meant for you for people to eat. It's not meant for you to do business. What does it mean to do business? Business means you're buying it for the purpose of selling it. That's what business means. That doesn't mean you're not allowed to buy Shemitah fruit. It means you're not allowed to buy it to sell it. Okay? You're not allowed to do business with Shemitah fruit. And therefore, local businesses, if you're in the fruit and vegetable import business, if you're in the retail restaurant business, so even if, right, and this goes in Eretz Yisrael, it's even more relevant because they're dealing with the product, right? So even if it's permitted to eat, so you'll say, okay, I'm a restaurant owner, I'm going to buy that and then sell it. You can't.
How does it get to market?
What? Oh, we're going to talk about that in a moment. But think about this. Esrogim, right? Esrogim. What is the importers? Anyone here an Esrog dealer? Right? If you're an Esrog dealer, your hands are tied, right? Your hands are tied, aren't they? Because you can't bring them in to sell them. You're not allowed to do that.
How about the lulavs? Bring in the lulavs. And then give a free esrog.
Okay, so lulavim, even though the Gemara says, it's an important point, though, that even though the Gemara sounds like lulavim are produce of Shemitah and also have Kedusha, but practically speaking, we have no use for lulavim except for the mitzvah. That's right. And therefore, it's something which there's no use for, even if it grows from the land. It does not have any kedusha shvias. It does not. It's not sanctified. So you can do business with lulavim. You just can't do business with esrogim. Now, that's number one. Number two is that money that's used to purchase Shemitah produce, even fruits, which you're allowed to purchase to buy, to eat, the money itself, which you've purchased the fruit with, is sanctified with Kedusha Shvius. Mm-hmm. So not only the fruit, but now the money. So Sobeys is selling produce from Israel. Right? Think about this. Costco is selling mangoes from Israel. So you go over and with a $10 bill and you buy a few mangoes. That $10 bill is now holy. And the next person who touches who gets that $10 bill, right? Let's say the next guy, your friend, he gets change. It's Dmei Shvius, it's called the money of Shemitah. Yeah. Oh, that's the answer. Yeah. Yeah. So you're not allowed to buy. You're not even allowed to buy it with cash. Why? Because the cash becomes Kedusha Shvius. So what? Okay. So it's Kedusha Shvius. Let's say the guy will take it. No. With Kedusha Shvius, what do you do with Kedusha Shvius money? You must then go and buy food with Kedusha Shvius money and eat it as if it was Shemitah produce. So even the next food that you buy has to be treated again. Right. So it's a chain reaction. Not only that, but you're not allowed to give an ignoramus. You're not allowed to give an ignorant person money of Shemitah because we're afraid he's going to take it and I don't know, go gamble or something. I don't know what he's going to do with it, but he's not going to use it for the right purposes. And therefore, you're not even allowed to buy it. Because if you're buying it, you're actually giving the Dmei Shvius, the money of Shemitah, to the store owner who knows what he's going to do with it. Right? So as somebody said, one of the solutions in order not to create a problem of Dmei Shvius is to use your credit card. Because, or to buy on credit, if the store will give you that opportunity. Because if you buy on credit, then it becomes a loan. Right? And once it becomes a loan, you can pay the loan. The loan isn't, you're paying a loan. That's separate from actually buying the produce. Fine. So that's the idea of Dmei Shvius. Then, you have to realize that you're not allowed to give Shemitah produce to a non-Jew to consume. That's usher. Okay? It's also a drasha. You're not allowed to give it to, it's holy. A non-Jew should consume it? No. Not only that, but you're not allowed to export Shemitah produce. This is, I maybe should have mentioned in the beginning. There's a prohibition, that Sefta says, that you're not, according to one interpretation at least, you're not allowed to export Shemitah produce. So now you're thinking, oh, esrog? So how do we get our esrogim, right?
Or the dates and the mangoes.
And so how does that work, right? Not only that, but we have to think about it on a level of, you know, a lot of these fruit that we see in the market were actually worked on Shemitah.
Right.
The Isser in a prohibited way, right? Because the people didn't know about it or didn't acknowledge Shemitah. Perhaps they relied on a heter mechira that they make, which is, you know, okay, it's good for the common person, but we don't want to rely on that. So in that sense, the problem is that it was actually worked on be'isser, and that's a whole different argument whether some fruit that was actually worked on in an illegal fashion, as far as vis-a-vis the laws of the Torah, becomes usser to eat. That's a machlokes. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein was makel, so he was lenient, so it's not the end of the world for a person to consume something that was worked on illegally. Okay? But from a Shemitah perspective, but if somebody wants to be stringent, he certainly can. So you have to look out for that.
It's hard to understand why it's
right. So it doesn't become a mitzvah at that point to eat. Right? It's only a mitzvah to eat it if it was true Shemitah produce that was kept in properly. Okay, so you have to sort of look at the whole picture over here. So a lot of the stuff is exported. It's exported illegally in the first place, right? And it was worked on, and so there are a lot of issues. Okay, now let's say I can get something that I can actually eat, right? And this is more relevant to something to Eretz Yisrael if you go there and whatever. So, or if you're going to eat your esrog, which is a great opportunity to fulfill this mitzvah.
Yeah.
Which until what time can he come before Shabbos?
Ah, well, probably.
Shiri patuach.
Oh, patuach. Ah.
Ki yish levadaot chamish dagot rak lechis
pnima. Ani choshev she I think Bambani is going to be here till I think echad.
No, ani li chol lemachat. בסיבות ארבע וחצי חמש אפשר?
ארבע וחצי אני לא חושב צריך לטלפון את הרב.
He'll be in 10 minutes, okay?
Yeah. חכה. הרב יגיע.
הרב יבוא כאן ועוד חמש, את עשר דקות.
Okay,
אני
אגיע. Okay. סליחה. No problem. So, you can't throw away Shemitah fruit. If it's edible, you're not allowed to discard it. So that means that if you made yourself like a fruit salad, right, you've got to eat it to the last drop. In fact, some people say
like Israeli shemitz, prunes.
What?
Oh, yes.
Israeli shemitz.
Shemitah.
Yeah, right.
Right? In fact,
this is in Israel. This is more applicable.
Well, okay, it's more applicable in Israel. Yeah. But you'll see. We'll talk about esrogim in a moment. Yeah. Oh, we'll talk about an esrogim in a moment. You can't throw out shemitah. You can't ruin it. You can't put it in together with garbage. You cannot. We had an incident. Yeah, we had an incident in one of the camps where they had a dip that was made by one of the companies. It came without a heksher, so they called up because they wanted to find out why did it come out without a heksher. It was like a baba ganoush, like that type of thing. Why did it come without a heksher? I ordered it from a kosher company, and they found out that the company had used vegetables. The vegetable from Shemitah, who came from Eretz Yisrael, so didn't receive a heksher. So now they want to know what they can do with it. Wow. Right? Okay, well, and it was a case's worth. Mm-hmm. Right? So they can't throw it out. They can't even leave it outside because then the animals are going to eat it, and it's actually food, which is, if something is edible for a human being, you're not allowed to give it to an animal. It's Shemitah food. Right? Vegetables. And so they actually had to dig up a hole and empty the sauce in the hole and then bury it.
Is there something about it having to be buried in Israel?
To bring it back. That's, some people say that, but not absolutely necessary. You're not doing it this way was the practical way. So you have to think about it on that. And then finally, you have to think about biur. What's biur? So very quickly, biur is that you're only allowed to eat Shemitah produce up until the animals, it would be available for the animals to eat. Once it's not available for the animals to eat, so meaning it's not growing anymore. Yeah. That particular species is not growing anymore in the field. The season's over. You also have to get rid of it. It's not true. Shemitah's not available for everybody, whatever the concept is, however you want to think about it. Once you have to be mavire it, you have to get rid of it. Okay, so really you have to be mafkir, you have to let it go, and you have to say it's hefker, it's open to anyone, you're not allowed to take it anymore, you're not allowed to keep it, you'd have to be mafkir. After you're mafkir, you can actually take it back. Okay, but there's some point in time where you actually have to take the Shemitah stuff out of your house and be mafkir. There's an exception to the rule. The rabbi said you can keep 3 sudas worth, another 3 meals worth of the fruit. Okay, but more than that, if you have more than that, you must get rid of it. Okay, and I'm telling it to you because this is going to be very relevant for esrogim. Okay, let's talk about specifically esrogim and how we should think about esrogim. So there are those who say that you should specifically not use Israeli esrogim this year. Why? Why not? Why shouldn't I use Israeli esrogim? Not because they can't be exported. You might think they can't be exported. Not because you can't be exported, because l'tzorech mitzvah, many of the poskim are matir, are permit, because it's a mitzvah. You're not bringing it out to eat, so I'm not lowering the kedusha. I'm bringing it out in order to fulfill price. A mitzvah with. What?
Not at that price.
Not at that price, yeah. But you see, you can't pay for it. Hang on. The reason why they say you should prefer a chutz la'aretz esrog is because when you handle your esrog with your hands, you make it brown. I mean, if you don't believe me, watch Rav Mordechai. look at him get into his esrog, right? He's gonna love his mitzvah, right? So he's gonna handle it. You're gonna look at it and turn it and whatever, and you're gonna handle it. And the oils in a person's hand actually make the peel spoil. So they feel that those poskim feel that you're not supposed to use a chutz la'aretz esrog.
No,
not so. It's an Israeli esrog for that reason, but many of the poskim and certainly the rabbanim that I've seen them write tshuvas about, and so many of the rabbanim, and I'm sure that's the psak here in Chutz La'aretz. I know that's our rabbanim, the Moshe Feinstein, for example, promoted buying Israeli esrogim even during Shemitah. He writes in the tshuva, and the reason is because. Even though you're spoiling it, but see, you might be spoiling it, and it might not be, and it's for the mitzvah, and therefore we're not really concerned about that. But on the other hand, if you are going to use, and you should prefer to use in Israeli esrog, there's all the other sorts of kedusha shvius that one has to be concerned about. First of all, we said, if it's grown illegally, so then there's one opinion, right, that the esrog, the fruit, would become forbidden to eat. There's one opinion, we don't hold that way, but according to that opinion, you can't be yotze with that esrog, because you're not allowed to be yotze with an esrog that you can't eat. That's the halacha. An esrog which is forbidden for consumption, you cannot use for the mitzvah. Okay? So, the esrog has to be permitted for consumption. So we have to know that it wasn't an illegal esrog. Not only that, but if the socher, if the esrog dealer, is going to pay for those esrogim and sell them on, then he's dealing with them illegally. You don't want that to happen. So you have to have a very good hechsher, and it has to be a very trustworthy socher. The dealer has to be trustworthy that he's not doing that. Well, then how does he get it? So he gets it through a vehicle called Otzer Beistin. What's Otzer Beistin? Otzer Beistin is a contraption that they worked out that you take the field and you give the field to the Beistin. Instead of just setting it free in Shemitah, you can actually give it to the Beistin, and the Beistin runs the field during Shemitah, and Beistin is allowed to hire people to work the field during Shemitah.
So it's similar to the principle, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it's you can draw some parallels. So Beistin is allowed to do that, and not only that, but Beistin can sort of, if they want, if they choose, they can export it. And if they export it, so all the people along the export line can charge not the cost of a beautiful esrog, because they're not allowed to cost it, just the costs of the labor, the transportation, plus their time, whatever they can. But it would have to be an equal price for every single esrog. So imagine going to the store and getting an esrog. For a beautiful esrog is the same price as an ugly esrog, right? That would be a novel idea. But they, if they wanted to do that, they could do that. And in Eretz Yisrael, actually, if you're going for sukkahs, in Eretz Yisrael, you're going to find a closed box esrogim. What's a closed box? They just seal the top of the box and they sell it for whatever, and you open it up, and that's your esrog. You have no choice. Too bad. Right?
It's like crackerjack with fries.
Yeah. No choice. And I did that when I was studying in Israel. I bought closed box esrogim, and it was very, very nice. Okay? But if you are going to buy an esrog here, open box, you just have to make sure it has a reliable hechsher. Okay? And that's not so simple, because, you know, there's so many people in between. The boxes are all open, and who knows, you know, they put the letters down, and maybe the tape, but the tape is open, and who knows if the esrog was transferred from box to box. You really have to... You have to have somebody that you trust. It's maybe a good business opportunity for COR to go into next time around, if you think about it more in advance. Again, giving hechsherim to esrog dealers, it's a very important thing. Okay, so that esrog dealer has to be very careful. Now, some of them, what they do is they won't charge you for the esrog, they'll charge you for the lulav. Why are they charging you for the lulav? Because you're allowed to buy the lulav. So they can kind of say, you know what, I can't get enough out of the esrogim to make money, because I can only charge labor cost. So, I'll charge for the lulav, like an exorbitant amount, right? And then buy a lulav, get your esrog for free, right? That's another way that they do it, that's basically a way that they go about selling the esrog. It's called havla'a. Now, not everybody holds that you can get around doing business with esrogim with havla'a. So if the dealer wanted to do that with his supplier, here, I'll take some branches from you for $1 million and give me all those esrogim, right? That's not so simple. Some allow it, some don't allow it. That's not so simple. But on the level of the consumer level, where you're buying it to use, not to make business, as well as the Dmei Shvius level, which is the money, does the money that you pay become also sanctified? Can the dealer now go and buy, you know, can he buy a house? He could, because you've used the money to buy the lulav and not the esrog. Okay, how much time do we have?
We don't have much.
2 minutes? Okay.
So what do you do with the esrog now?
The last thing I wanted to address is Shemitah Esrogim after Sukkot. And by the way, if something is not clear to you now, this is an article that I'm presenting, and the article is going to come out in a publication which will be available in the shuls before Sukkot. So not to worry. But you heard it from the source. The Shemitah Esrogim after Shemitah, so they must not be thrown away. Okay? In order for them to be thrown away, they have to be inedible. Right? So you have to wait until they're inedible. Okay, but wait a second. If you wait until they're inedible, when is the time of beer? When do you have to get rid of them because they're not available anymore to the animals in the field? Right? When do I have to get rid of them? So esrogim is sometime between, Rabbi Shlomo Miller told me, Hanukkah time, and many of the svarim that are published say Shvat, which is about a month after Hanukkah. So sometime in between Hanukkah and Shvat, you have to get rid of them. So what you really practically have to do is take them out of the house, bring them back in. Next day, out, in, out, in, out, in, well, until the end
day,
of... Because every day might be the time of beer. You might not have been fine. So you have to do that for a month straight. So if you want to do that for a month straight, you have the opportunity to do a month straight. But, remember I said before, if you don't have 3 meals worth, right, which is an esrog and a half, by the way. If you don't have 3 meals worth, then you don't have to do beer. So if you only bought one esrog, it's less than an esrog and a half. Per person. So if you don't have, if you're not a brisker and you didn't get, Mordechai, you buy 2 esrogim? No? Fine. So if you don't buy 2 esrogim for yourself, then you don't have to do this beer. Another way to get out of the beer is by making esrog jam. But if you make esrog jam, you have to be very careful because you have to eat every last scrap. If you don't eat every last scrap, then you're just ruining. Yeah. Now listen to this. There is a minhag that's brought down that a woman who's expecting should bite off the top of an esrog and she'll have an easy time giving birth. You ever heard that before? That's a minhag that's brought down.
Not Jews.
But you're not allowed to do that to a Shemitah esrog because you're ruining the top of the esrog if you bite into it. So there's two ways to do it. Either you just make sure that you only get the tip of the crown, that little wooden part, which is just it's just a piece of wood, so you're not ruining the fruit if you do that. Or you can actually take it off with your hand and then you wrap it up and preserve it. So that way you're not actually ruining the esrog. Like you were saying before, some say you should send the esrog back to Eretz Yisrael because there are those who say you shouldn't really eat fruit of Israel of Shemitah outside of Israel. That's not an agreed to custom, but some people actually send their esrog back to Eretz Yisrael. Now, if you're in Eretz Yisrael and you want to take your esrog home to make jam, you're not allowed to do that because you're not allowed to bring the esrog outside of Eretz Yisrael to eat. You're allowed to bring it outside for a mitzvah, to be yotzei the mitzvah, but you're not allowed to bring the esrog outside of Eretz Yisrael to eat. So what should you do? You should let it rot. If you only have one esrog, put in a plastic bag once it's rot and then discard it in the green bin. Thank you very much for listening.
So the average produce you're getting at a store...
What's that?
The average produce you're going to a store, didn't they work illegally?
The average what?
Pomegranates and dates.